This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. The outgoing commander of U.S. NATO forces in Afghanistan, General John Nicholson, says he believes there is an unprecedented opportunity, a window of opportunity for peace in the 17-year conflict. He said a three-day June ceasefire underscored the desire for peace.
So this first ceasefire really unleashed the Afghan people's desire for peace and an end to violence on really a national and unprecedented scale. And numerous groups across Afghanistan, the People's Peace Movement, religious ulamas, civil society, youth activists, women's groups, are all calling for peace.
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has offered insurgents another truce, this one lasting as long as 3 months. The Taliban has yet to respond. As for the Trump administration's South Asia policy announced a year ago, the general said it's working.
Within 6 months, we had two peace offers on the table. An open letter from the Taliban to the American people and President Ghani's peace offer. Then within 10 months, we had the first ceasefire, which unleashed these social pressures, the demand of the Afghan people across all society for peace. And now we're entering a window where a second ceasefire has been offered, not taken yet. But the point is to enable a political dialogue to begin.
The insurgents, meanwhile, have accepted a Russian invitation for international peace talks in Moscow in early September. The Afghan government and U.S. have declined. Zimbabwe's highest court expected to rule Friday in an opposition appeal to overturn the results of last month's election won by the ruling ZANU-PF party over allegations of fraud. Tabani Mpofu is the lawyer for the opposition leader, Nelson Samisa.
No, look, we've done our bits. It is not for good to do the rest. That is all that I can say.
The court could throw out the case, declare a new winner, or order a new election within 60 days. This is VOA News. A man claiming to be Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi resurfaced in an audio recording Wednesday, urging his followers to persevere in their fight. The voice says the jihad is expanding despite American efforts to limit it and vowed to pursue, quote, hit-and-run tactics. The IS leader's last purported audio message was released a year ago. His last public appearance was in 2014. Russia says there is a high probability al-Baghdadi was killed in a Russian airstrike near the Syrian city Raqqa last year. A year after hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims fled Myanmar, also known as Burma, following a security crackdown, the UN warned Wednesday more than 500,000 children in camps in Bangladesh and in Myanmar face immediate danger, including disease and flooding. Simon Ingram is a spokesman for the UN Children's Agency.
We're talking about risking the potential loss of a generation of Rohingya children, because it isn't just the 500,000 or so children on the Bangladeshi side of the border, but it's also those who are still left behind in Rakhine State.
While an estimated 700,000 Rohingya fled to Bangladesh last year, the UN said up to 600,000 remain in Rakhine State. Italy's Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte has called on his European Union counterparts to take in some of the migrants aboard a Coast Guard vessel in a Sicilian port. Nearly 200 migrants have been refused permission to leave the vessel since it docked 2 days ago. The Pacific U.S. island state of Hawaii is bracing for the impact of a major hurricane. The Category 4 storm, dubbed Lane, has weakened slightly but still packs winds of 250 kilometers per hour. David Iga is the state's governor.
We still are expecting wind, rain, flooding effects that would affect statewide. You know, we want to assure you that federal, state, and county emergency responders are working in coordination to keep the community safe.
The storm could dump up to 50 centimeters of rain on the islands. Israel announced Wednesday it's advancing plans to build over 1,000 homes in the occupied West Bank, including 400 in an area north of Jerusalem where an Israeli was stabbed to death last month. As U.S. and Chinese trade officials hold talks Thursday in Washington, 25% tariffs on $16 billion in additional Chinese imports will go into effect. China has retaliated with counter duties. Meanwhile, the so-called bull market in U.S. stocks begun in 2009 continues. Jonathan Corpina is with Meridian Equity Partners.
I think investors back in 2008, 2009 learned a very expensive lesson during the financial crisis. And I think overall, investor sentiment and corporate sentiment has changed to get us to where we are today.
U.S. central policymakers warned trade tensions could undermine the bull market. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today's Thursday, August 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Tensions are mounting in Zimbabwe as that country awaits a high court ruling tomorrow on election results challenge.
The court has now come to the end of the proceedings for the day, and the court should be able to come up with the judgment at 2 p.m. on the 24th of August.
That's Zimbabwe Chief Justice Luke Malaba speaking late Wednesday after hearing arguments from both sides. We'll tell you why President Kabila has rejected the appointment of Thabo Mbeki as South Africa's special envoy. Uganda deploys heavy security as detained Member of Parliament Bobby Wine goes to court tomorrow, Thursday. Today, Thursday, meanwhile, journalists and civil society groups in neighboring Kenya are showing solidarity.
We are calling on our members to engage in a week-long Red Ribbon campaign to show solidarity with those people in Uganda who have been subjected to human rights violations.
Charles Kanjama is chairperson of the Law Society of Kenya, and engineers are developing technologies to prevent newborn deaths in Africa. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Tensions are mounting in Zimbabwe as that country awaits a constitutional court ruling tomorrow, Friday, on the opposition challenge to the July 30th presidential election results. The court heard arguments on Wednesday for and against the main opposition request to nullify the results, which the Election Commission said were won by incumbent Emmerson Mnangagwa. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
The court has now come to the end of the proceedings for the day. Judgment will be reserved, and the court should be able to come up with the judgment at 2 p.m. on the 24th of August, that is Friday. The court will adjourn.
That is Zimbabwe's Chief Justice Luke Malaba late Wednesday after hearing heads of arguments for nearly 10 hours from lawyers of the country's main opposition leader, Nelson Chamisa, President Mnangagwa, and the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. On Wednesday, lawyers for the commission confirmed in court that since the opposition filed its petition about 2 weeks ago, the elections body has changed the presidential election result twice. The lawyers said the changes were meant to correct what it calls insignificant mathematical clerical error, which should not change the declared victory of President Mnangagwa, who was initially given 50.8% of the votes, while Chamisa was given 44.3% of the vote. Lawyers for the opposition then said those changes of the election results actually confirmed that the Priscilla Chigumba-led Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, rigged the election for the ruling ZANU-PF presidential candidate. Here is Morgan Komich, the MDC Alliance chairman.
Last time, I said the results announced by Chigumba and the team were fake. They actually proved for the world that the results that they initially announced were fake. So far, they've changed the results 3 times, confirmed in the court of law. So the results are fake. If you all followed what was happening in the court, ZEC failed to answer so many fundamental questions. For an example, the difference between parliamentary votes and the presidential votes they tried was not easy for them.
On Wednesday, ZEC lawyers struggled to account for the difference in the numbers of people that voted for presidential candidate and those that voted for parliamentary candidates. Those numbers are supposed to tally. Louis Uriri, the lawyer for President Emmerson Mnangagwa, says the opposition election petition has no merit.
We are very confident that we have established that the application is frivolous, brought for purposes other than the litigation before the court. It's meant for a show elsewhere, definitely not on legal matters. What carries the day in our view in legal matters are facts, and facts, just facts. And they've not given any facts. They pluck figures from the air. There is nothing that has been placed before the court that can justify a vacation of the declaration that was made by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. The application was a non-issue in legal terms.
Should Friday, the Constitutional Court confirm that President Mnangagwa has to be inaugurated within 48 hours. If it nullifies the July 30th presidential election, as what opposition leader Nelson Chamisa wants, Zimbabwe will have to hold another election within 60 days. Columbus Mavunga for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Harare.
The Ugandan government has deployed heavy security in the capital, Kampala, as badly beaten Member of Parliament Bobby Wine, who has been charged with treason, will appear in a military court today, Thursday. The lawmaker faces charges of illegal possession of firearms and ammunition. His lawyers accuse the military of torturing him, but President Yoweri Museveni has denounced the allegations as fake news. Asuma Basaliwa is Bobby Wine's lawyer.
He will be appearing before the court martial today at 9 o'clock in the morning, Ugandan time. And the case is coming up for what we call mention. This is when we will get to hear the progress of the investigation from the army prosecutors so that we are updated. So there is nothing much to expect from us as a defense team because it is going to be a report of the progress of the investigations.
Do you anticipate any possible additional charges against your client?
We don't anticipate any of that, but we are waiting to hear what will actually come out of court tomorrow.
There is a video on social media showing your client in a jovial mood with the Deputy Speaker of Parliament, and he seemed to be in good spirit and not assaulted or having any facial contusions, as some people have speculated. This, supporters of the NRM are saying, shows that President Museveni was right, that Bobby Wine was not assaulted, as you and some of his supporters are saying. How do you react to that?
Definitely, he is undergoing treatment in the military detention. It is not that he's not receiving any form of treatment at all. So the reason such videos are now coming out is because he's getting better, at least by physical appearance. But the deputy speaker who visited him and who took the video confirmed that he told him that he was actually in pain. So the fact that he is smiling and is looking better does not take away the fact that he was tortured, does not take away the fact that he was brutalized, does not take away the fact that he still needs urgent medical attention.
Well, I'm sure you've heard reports from local media reporters saying that they have been receiving threatening phone calls from people they don't know, saying that if they don't drop reports that they are writing for their respective media organizations about Bobby Wine, they could face serious consequences. Some are saying this is not true and part of the plot or ploy by the defense team of Bobby Wine to create public sympathy for him to dissuade from the charges against him.
Well, if they are threats to the media, it would not surprise me. It is not news. Mr. Museveni and the NRM government increasingly worried about the media. And it wouldn't be the first time that the press is being intimidated. The press here in this country is not really free. So for the time they suffer intimidation, they are closed. Journalists are arrested. A good number of them journalists are tortured. A good number of them are still battling with court cases. So it wouldn't surprise me that any media organization is being threatened.
Asuma Basaliwa is the lawyer for popular Uganda parliamentarian and musician Bobby Wine. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 23rd. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Journalists and civil society groups in neighboring Kenya are showing solidarity with Ugandan journalists covering the story of parliamentarian Bobby Wine. Ugandan journalists say they are being intimidated by authorities and call upon not to cover the story. Churchill Otieno, chairperson of the Kenya Editors Guild, says attacks and harassment of Ugandan journalists in the course of their work is an attack on freedom of expression. Meanwhile, Kenyan lawyers and civil society groups are planning a demonstration today, Thursday, to demand the release of Ugandan parliamentarian Bobby Wine. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Chairperson of the Kenya Editors Guild, Churchill Otieno, says developments in Uganda are of a big concern to the guild as well as the editors around the world. He says the entire international community see this as a serious affront to media freedom and the Ugandan people's right to information.
Given the developments in Uganda over the last 2 weeks, we've seen a first campaign by the security agency that in the political contest that is going on there, every few days a journalist or journalists end up being attacked. And it is a big concern for us, and it is a big concern for the African editors.
The African Editors Forum has also condemned the attack on the media by law enforcement agencies in Uganda. At least 8 journalists have been attacked and their equipment destroyed in the line of their duty. The Law Society of Kenya Nairobi branch and other civil society groups will today, Thursday, take to the streets of Nairobi demanding the release of Ugandan Member of Parliament Bobi Wine and condemning human rights in Uganda. Charles Kanjama is the chairperson of the Law Society of Kenya, Nairobi branch.
We are calling on our members to engage in a week-long Red Ribbon campaign to show solidarity with those people in Uganda who have been subjected to human rights violations. We are calling upon members to join us for a march that we are going to have Thursday from Freedom Corner in the morning, where we are going to manifest our displeasure at what is happening in a neighboring country.
Kanjama says the government of Uganda should respect the rule of law, or the current situation in the neighboring country may worsen.
We urge the government of the Republic of Uganda to respect the rule of law and recognize that the people of Uganda want peace and stability, and the ongoing crackdown on opposition dissidents will do nothing but worsen the situation.
The executive director of the Kenya Commission of Human Rights, Jaji Kogoro, has also called upon the Ugandan government to respect the rule of law. He says the attack on journalists in line of their duty during the recent by-election in Arua was uncalled for.
By coming out to protest, people commit no crime, do not expect to be beaten up and arrested by police. And in addition to that, the special place of journalists who come out to cover such protest is also protected both under international law, East African law, and Ugandan law.
3 members of Kenyan Parliament have vowed to lead a delegation of their colleagues to Uganda to hold a protest in the next 1 week. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A top Ugandan government official has condemned security personnel who battered and injured members of parliament last week. Jacob Ulanya, parliamentary deputy speaker, says the incident could put the country into more chaos in future elections. Mugumi Davis Rakarinj reports from Kampala.
While addressing journalists this Wednesday, Jacob Ulanya, Uganda's deputy speaker, described the situation of the 2 MPs, Francis Zake and Robert Chagulanyi, popularly known as Bobi Wine, as worrying.
It is in a lot of pain. I met Dr. Gideon Nwajira, who is in charge of that unit, and says there's something called muscle spasm that is on his left back, and it's really causing him a lot of pain. I've just seen the Honorable Zake here, similar situation. He's in a lot of pain, and he has wounds in his fingers. And I saw one on his left side, also a cut, also in pain.
The 2 MPs and other politicians are among dozens of people that were severely beaten, injured and detained by security personnel at the Rware to replace the late Ibrahim Abiriga, a prominent member of the ruling NRM. The parliamentarian was gunned down by known people early June. Olanya says it is regrettable that the MPs and other politicians were subjected to such inhumane acts in the first place.
This situation should not have happened. Never should it have happened. It's really sad that Honorable Abiriga was brutally murdered, and the campaigns to replace him in parliament has caused people this level of stress. It shouldn't have happened. It was not necessary.
Well, as the health conditions of MP Chagulanyi appears to be improving, that of his colleague Zake is reportedly worsening. Both lawyers and families of the two MPs have requested that the two be released so they can access better treatment outside prisons. Olanya worries future elections could end up, even on a worse note, unless leaders from all political divide agree not to be violent.
The extent to which violence is escalating in this country is worrying, and we should all get concerned. Because if a by-election can cause this amount of tension, this amount of violence, you're in fear of another election coming up in this country. It is something we need to sit back, reflect deeply upon, because this country is enough for all of us. And we all have a role to play, and we can all play our respective roles without any interference. Why all this?
The detention of the MPs has attracted sporadic demonstrations in some parts of the country, mainly in Kampala. Chagulanyi is expected to appear in a military court today, Thursday. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
A spokesman for Democratic Republic of Congo's ruling coalition has defended President Joseph Kabila's rejection this week of former South African President Thabo Mbeki as his country's envoy to the DRC. Spokesman Andre Alain Atundu says President Kabila has nothing per se against President Mbeki, but he said Mr. Kabila's refusal is based on his commitment to protect the DRC's sovereignty. Atundu tells me that past envoys to the DRC have tended to support the opposition. He denies that the rejection of Mbeki is part of a plot by Mr. Kabila to steal the December 23rd presidential election.
President Kabila is not against President Thabo Mbeki. He is well respected in Congo. But what President Kabila doesn't want is the negative role of the special envoy, because the president usually doesn't help to find a genuine solution to Congolese problems. And they are very, very prejudiced against the power in Congo and in favor of the opponents.
Mr. Atundu, is President Kabila or are you talking about all special envoys or just Mr. Mbeki?
No, not about Mr. Mbeki. It's our policy about the special envoy. Usually, if you watch yourself in last years, the role of the special envoy, the role is very negative to the searching solution for a problem. It seems to us that they have their special agenda, which is not the political Congolese agenda.
Does President Kabila have any power? I know he has said that he's not going to run again. So does he have power to say who can come to observe the election?
No. It's a matter for Congolese sovereignty. Like in the United States, the president can say, I don't want this man or these people or this party to come here in my country. It depends on the perception of the president. He has nothing against President Mbeki. He has nothing against South Africa, which is a French country.
One of the criticisms I hear is that this action by President Kabila is an attempt by the coalition, which you are a spokesman for, to make sure that your candidate, Emmanuel Shadary, wins the December election. Because if you don't have too many people watching you, then you are going to try to make sure he wins.
No. The power of law is still running in Congo. And the warrant of the running law is President Kabila. He must do his job, not against opponents and in favor of power coalition. It's just his job as president and warrant of Congolese constitution.
Will you accept observers from, say, the United States, the United Kingdom, or any other place?
Why not? Because the Electoral Commission work with experts of Great Britain, of the European Union, and of United Nations. I think it isn't a special problem. But at this stage, it's a matter of sovereignty. I think his concern is to let the process run normally without external action.
Mr. Atundu, you are very kind. It's always nice to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Andre Alain Atundu is a spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Around the world, 2.6 million newborns die within a month after they are born, according to the World Health Organization. The majority of these deaths happen in developing countries where there is a lack of adequate health care. A project called Nest 360 Degrees at the Rice 360 Degrees Institute for Global Health in Houston is trying to reduce the number of preventable newborn deaths in Africa by providing appropriate medical devices for hospitals. VOC Elizabeth Lee has the details.
An internship at a hospital in Malawi was an eye-opening experience for Sonia Sosa.
Sometimes there are tons of babies and there are not that many nurses, so they're understaffed. It was really hard to work there, but then it also challenged me to really go back and work really hard to be able to provide this care that is accessible to them.
Sosa is one of several global health fellows who are developing technologies such as this one called IncuBaby. Yeah,
basically, it's a warming crib
to help the most vulnerable patients in the hospitals of sub-Saharan Africa, such as Malawi.
Immensely tiny, tiny newborns with only the bare minimum of technology, if anything, available to them.
17 technologies have been identified, and together they can help prevent the top causes of newborn deaths, such as pneumonia and preterm birth in this part of the world.
Our students developed a solution that would cost on the order of hundreds of dollars, and not only address the fact that it needed to be robust and cost-effective, but also easy to maintain and repair should something happen.
Countries like Malawi have received donations of medical equipment in the past, but they were not always helpful.
I saw that all the devices coming as donations from first world countries, they didn't fit in there. People used it differently, put them in weird places, and when they broke, there was no spare parts.
These devices ended up collecting dust and becoming useless because they were not right for the environment.
That engineers, doctors, nurses aren't necessarily familiar and or trained with them unless they were gone to a Western school where they've been exposed to some of these technologies, but maybe in even more complex forms. So there's a systemic change that needed to be addressed.
Part of that change includes developing technologies that monitor the temperature and the respiratory rate of a newborn while also being low cost and sustainable over time.
For the harsh environments, it includes inconsistent electricity and also a very dusty environment, lack of maintenance and spare parts.
We're in some cases incorporating battery power where it's appropriate, and then in other cases testing out backup power or including sort of with the Nest bundle of technologies, the a package of solar power so that when there are those blackouts, there's a backup system.
Of the 17 technologies, some are commercially available. Others are either in clinical trials or in early prototypes. The goal is to eventually develop all the technologies, scale them, and roll them out, first in Malawi and eventually to other countries that need them. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A U.S. congressional delegation left Wednesday for Ethiopia to hold talks about that country's reform efforts since Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed took office in April this year. Republican Congressman Christopher Smith, who is leading the delegation, said he's cautiously optimistic. And that's it for this Thursday, August 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Botte in Washington.
Come celebrate the 60th birthday of legendary King of Pop, Michael Jackson, on Wednesday, August 29th, with a very special edition of Border Crossings. Join Larry London as he takes you back through time with a full hour of Michael Jackson's greatest hits. With a career spanning over 40 years, Michael Jackson gave us plenty of songs to choose from. Don't miss Border Crossings on Wednesday, August 29th at 1500 Universal, as we pay tribute to one of the greatest pop stars of all time.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, pressure mounts on Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni over the beating and detention of music star Bobby Wine. and we'll discuss the legacy of Kofi Annan on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.